Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mutto at Midnight with your host, Mutto Sasquatch. Mutto is a shaman who works with the written and spoken word. He has played his flute, offers sacred smoke in the four directions. Please join Mutto in sacred ceremony. And now, Mutto at Midnight.
Thank you so much, Chief Iggy. I do appreciate that introduction you give me every week when I'm able to access my switchboard, that is, or switchboard. What would you call this? They call it studio. I guess it sort of looks like it looks like the thing that would be on your computer if you were in a studio. So I'll let it stand at that. Good evening. My name is Mutto Sasquatch. I am your host for the next 30 minutes of time here in this little corner of the internet. The program is Mutto at Midnight. I've subtitled tonight's show The Sobriety Show because sobriety is on my mind. But first off, I just have a couple of other things I'd like to mention. I feel compelled to say a word on behalf of Jared the Subway Guy, who got himself into some trouble. And of course, our thoughts go out to the people who were victimized, and we don't really know a lot about that, nor should we. I just have been observing how much glee we seem to take when people who have become successful, who came from, you know, zero. I don't know if it came exactly from zero, but certainly from a background more similar to our own than the stratospheric heights he finally reached, of course, being the lead spokesman for Subway restaurants for, I believe, it's been at least a decade since we first found Jared on our television sets, because he had eaten only Subway subs for a certain amount of time and lost a bunch of weight. And of course, he reached the pinnacle of his career with his appearance in Sharknado 2 last year. Or was it earlier? I think it may just have been earlier this year. And then some, I'll use the word shocking. I was shocked. Some shocking allegations turned out to be shocking truths, and now he is headed to prison for 15 years. And he's completed that cycle that so many people, I mean, you go from zero to superstar, and usually that doesn't stick. Usually you end up going from zero to superstar and back to zero, and that's, what has likely happened to Mr. Fogel. When I first heard about this, I had a very, I guess it's called unsupportive thought. I don't know that he really needs to be supported. I guess I feel called to just say something, just because he's being savaged. And what he did was reprehensible. I'm not going to minimize it at all. I don't think there's a lot of thought for what he did or what happened to the people he did it to. People are just having a lot of fun with it. I think that's sort of an unfortunate side effect of our celebrity, of our obsession with celebrity and celebrities. But in any if I had a thought, I said, we get, because Jared lives in my city, in my large city in the Midwest, or did until very recently anyway, and when he comes back, and he will, even if he does the whole 15 years, that's what he's likely to come back, and we get, in my state, we get these sex offender notifications. They come in the mail, they're white postcards. And they've got the person's, they've come from the sheriff's department, they got the person's photograph and vital statistics. And they don't even really say, they don't say what they did, they say what the charge was, the charge they were convicted of. And if, Beyond that, you don't have accepted, and they tell you where they live. So we know, because we have a right to know. So, you know, there will be presumably one of those for him when he comes back. And I said, I would bet $20, if I had $20, that someone will go to his home and try and get him to autograph their card. Now, who's with me on that? Who believes that someone will do that and then put it on eBay? There'll be plenty of opportunities. Again, Jared, I don't know what sort of deep-seated problems or drives led to this situation, but insofar as you are now a sacrifice to the God celebrity, I do feel, I don't know if empathy is the right word, I because I've never had a similar experience, that I feel for him, and I feel for that segment. You know, again, what he did, thoroughly nasty, but the role he now plays, at least until someone else messes up, but, you know, Charlie Sheen has just gotten in line. But you know, beyond that, I do send. I do hope that whatever it is that troubles Jared's spirit will be released, and that the suffering of the people that he victimized—I hate to use that word, but I can't think of a better one. I can't think of a more accurate one, so I have to stick with that one. That those people, that their pain be released as well. Okay, so that's it on that topic. I also want to mention that we are on the withinsightsradio.com network of blogtalkradio.com. And you can come here for not just my show, but several other ones, the flagship show being Chief Iggy and David Two Crows, who are appearing on Monday evenings. I believe that show has moved to 7 o'clock. It was originally 6. I don't know if that was a permanent move or is just to accommodate Chief Iggy's soccer coaching schedule. But if you go to the website, I'm sure they will tell you all about it. We also have, I know, some sort of rotating programming on Wednesdays. And Mark the Rabbit Hole, our resident astrologer, will be speaking to you at 11:30 on Friday afternoons. You catch me here Fridays at midnight or Saturdays at midnight, depending on how you look at where midnight is. If midnight isn't Friday night, then it's Fridays. If midnight is Saturday morning, then it's Saturdays. But anyway, I'm here. And it's all about the spoken word. You'll hear lots of spoken words from me. I'm trying to eliminate the number of times I say the word "and." I've noticed that listening to many of my past recent programs, is that it's all one long sentence with the different ideas connected by the word "and," which must be very tiresome for you to listen to. So applying concentration, maybe there'll be a few more gaps or pauses like that last one. While I try to corral my brain into not forcing me to say "and," please forgive me for that. But I am here. I'm here for 30 minutes at midnight. Coming up on 4 years or 5 years? I think it's 4 years. I believe it's 4 years. Maybe it's 5. I don't know. I'll have to go back and check. It's been a while. Been a while I've been doing this. When I first started doing the show, the focus of the show was my efforts towards addiction recovery through working the 12 steps. And that lasted a few weeks, and I found I was kind of bored by it because I was doing so many other things in my life that reflected the 12 steps that I found when I got the headphones on and wanted to do this, that I really wanted to talk about something else. So it shifted more towards spirituality and things that were happening in my life and then relating them to this growing spirituality I was finding through Nemanja and the Condor Eagle We always called it the Condor Eagle Lodge. I'm not sure if we do it. I think we were calling it the Lodge, and then it wasn't the Lodge. Now it's the Lodge again. But it's the Condor Eagle Nemanja group here in Central Ohio, which is an adopted Native American spirituality. And you can find out more about that by listening to Chief Iggy and David Tucro's show. Me, I just kind of talk. I just kind of talk about what's on my mind and try and make some sort of sense about it. But as I said before, this was going to be as originally conceived in a pizza place one night. The show was going to be about the 12 steps. And I'm finding tonight I want to talk about that. Maybe not the 12 steps specifically, but sobriety and the idea of sobriety. I struggled with addictions for most of my life. And there I did an and. Okay, you'd have to take off a point every time I say and. It was something that it becomes the thing that guides sort of one's decision making. You look back on it and say, why did I make that lousy decision? But I don't really have to ask myself because I know why I made the decision. And it's not so much the material, the substance that one's addicted to. My drug of choice was alcohol. But it can be anything that becomes the center of your life. That one, I have to go back to one, use the closest thing to a neutral pronoun that we have in English. Whatever it is that one pursues to the exclusion of anything else because it fills some sort of void in one's own life. That's more personal philosophy than official dogma. I did speak to a therapist who introduced me to the concept of different, I guess, types or labels of personalities, a system that was used for most of the history of psychotherapy through the 20th century anyway, not going back quite as far as Freud, but something used until some different ideas of classifications and diagnoses came into vogue starting in the 80s and moving forward to the present time. But each sort of disorder wasn't even thought of a separate disorder as in, personality types. For instance, a paranoid personality had certain features. A narcissistic personality had certain features. You could match up the features with the type and say, there you are, and here's your solution. Thank you very much. This particular therapist I was speaking with said that under that system, which has fallen out of vogue, reputable therapists aren't supposed to use it anymore, but under that system, I would have had what was called an addictive personality, which was more or less what I just described. I begin to focus on something because I feel it will fill the emptiness that I feel inside. And it doesn't. Of course, it does not. But my body learns the lesson. My body is trained to think that it will. And so I react. With time, I'll begin to react as if I don't get this thing that I've fixated on, I will die. And that's, it becomes the most, again, the most important thing. I will not live, it isn't cannot live, for me, at any rate, it's that I will not survive if I don't get this thing or do this thing. When, at certain times, when alcohol wouldn't do it for me. Different things, gambling was there for a while. But one of the things that I would shift to or use in addition would be seeking out dangerous situations. This is something that has come into my life again. And I feel a return to, I don't know if it's a return to the 12 steps or a return to something like the 12 steps, is necessary for me at this time. I haven't had a drop of liquor in 5 years, 5.5 years. So I'm dry. There's a difference between being dry and being sober. Even the 12-steppers recognize that. And yet, for the 12-steppers, there's a focus on working the program, ritualistic working of the program, and a talking cure, even if we don't necessarily know what the hell it is we're talking about. I don't know exactly what the void is. I have some ideas. Those ideas have changed as I've, you know, as I've worked through, you know, worked through the 12 steps and worked through therapy for 7, going on 8 years now. Actually, a little longer than that, but never mind. My first attempt at therapy was kind of didn't really go anywhere, and then the therapy place closed, so I couldn't go anymore. But I started therapy in earnest in 2006. Yes, in 2006. And that was a time, although I hadn't started working the 12 steps at that time. It was certainly a time where my life had become unmanageable. It was a year later before I had taken a female crack addict into my home in the belief that I could reform her. At the same time, I was curing myself of addiction. And one evening while I slept, she emptied my apartment of anything of value that she could carry and left me basically penniless. And when I woke up and discovered this, I sent a farewell email to my family, and I got in my car with the intention of driving it into a reservoir. But Spirit guided me to the emergency room of a nearby hospital instead. I had a brief but informative stay at their psychiatric ward. They let me go home on two conditions. One, that I move in with my parents for a while. I shouldn't say this. I love my parents very much, but maybe having me move in with them wasn't the best. I'm speaking low now because my mother might still be awake in the next room. Maybe having to move back in with your parents at the age of 43 isn't going to quell your thoughts of suicide. But anyway, they gave me a bunch of things to do, things to work on, things to keep me busy. And one of the options was attending AA meetings. And I started attending 5, 6, 7 of them a day just to keep my mind from sort of consuming itself. Let me... Oh, good, it's right here. I got my copy of the big book right here. And I went to the meetings not really expecting a whole lot. I was just going there so I could check it off of my list and tell them that I went. But there are some words here that just knocked me flat. And I'm going to read them to you. This is from page 83 of my edition. I don't know. If you happen to have one with you, it might not be the same. This is like a pocket edition, but... says here, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not. I don't think this is exactly where I wanted to go. Hold on. I didn't jump in the right place. Okay, here it is. This is called the ninth step promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor damn, I have trouble reading now. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And, you know, that still doesn't tell me what the void is. But I knew I wanted those things. I wanted what they were promising me, especially this particular one. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. My, how I knew that feeling. And still know it. And it still drives my behavior, even after that experience of 2007, that experience, how long, I'm trying to count years as I'm reading a message here. 8 years ago, I was trying to make a movie 8 years ago. I was working hard to build an independent life as an independent, filmmaker, cinema person. And I was messing it up with, dallying around with this woman who was looking for an opportunity to destroy me. And those same kinds of impulses I find have been coming back since I'm in this new place. I'm not so new anymore. I've lived there for 7 months now. It's in a very, very bad part of town, as they say. And I discovered in just walking around a bit that it's not far from me, about 3 blocks from where I live, is the center of this sort of crack house prostitution cycle. The women, they live all piled up together in a house that some man owns, and he brings them crack, and then they go out to get more money, and then they come back to the house and he brings them crack. That's the cycle. And you see these women walking the streets out there all the time. I've been spending time out there more than I should, and I haven't, I haven't touched any substances. I have had conversations with some of the young ladies out there. It's a terrifying experience to be in the midst of that, to be with people who live in a, I thought I had done some degrading things. And then, I talked to some of the people who live in these crack houses, and I was like, I'm not even close. Not even close. And the other day, Tuesday, I spent the better part of 3 hours. I picked one of these girls up. I bought her lunch. Very thin, evidently hadn't eaten for a while. And, she was mostly interested in getting back to the house and getting some crack. But she talked to me for a while. We talked, this is close to 3 hours. And I always used to joke that the strippers and hookers have the best stories. And I don't even want to joke about that anymore. The things she told me about the way she lives. And I don't know, I can't independently verify any of this. I don't know that any of it is true. But I know she didn't look good. She looked very thin. She acted young, but looked old. She spoke of, you know, she always, she wore her coat, she wouldn't take her coat off in the restaurant because she's used to wearing it all the time, because if she doesn't, it'll get stolen. She talked about people who owed her drugs and had never paid her back, but kept, you know, hitting her up for more. She talked about, you know, her phone being stolen. She talked about she talked about being beaten. She talked about being raped. And I listened, and sort of encapsulated in her story. That's not the right word. That's not the right word at all. Just surrounded in this, and not so much feeling the desire to save her, but feeling this sort of bubble of protection and of yes, superiority that I imagined was projected around me to sort of fall away. You know, because of this crack selling dude decided he didn't like what she was doing right then and there, that he could come by and I could be in, you know, quite a bit. What could I do? You know, it could be a shot in the head for both of us. I mean, that could happen. That could have happened. It could still happen. You know, because I live in that neighborhood. Danger seeking, and again, it's something that fills that void, that feeling. It's a feeling of not being special as part of it. That feeling that, you know, I was raised to believe that I was special and I was going to do great things, and I never did. At least not in my belief. And, you know, drinking or smoking or strip clubs or hookers or now hanging around crack addicts makes me forget about the void. It doesn't fill it. Certainly does not fill it. It doesn't make me feel any better. I feel worse when it's over. So my decision this week was, I can't claim, yeah, I haven't had a drink in 5.5 years, but I can no longer claim 5.5 years of sobriety if I'm acting out in this way. So I have reset my sobriety date. If I was introducing myself at a meeting, I would say, "Hi, my name is Mud Toe." Actually, I'd use my birth name, but for this, we'll say Mud Toe. My name is Mud Toe. I'm an addict, and my sobriety date is November 18th, 2015, which gives me 2 days. But as many 12-steppers say, really, today is all I have. So now the question becomes, do I resume the meetings? And I've gotten a list of potential meetings, which aren't 12-step meetings, but they're meetings put on by a... forget all that for now. It's just something that might be more suitable for this problem. So my therapist stepping up big for me, and again, as she has done many times, when she hears me telling strange stories. We unfortunately are out of time. I think I may have to talk about this more next week. I won't... have much of an opportunity to get into trouble because I'm staying with my parents all week for the Thanksgiving holiday. I do wish you and yours all the best on Thanksgiving, and I will speak to you again after the holiday. Until then, have a pleasant good evening.